You're in a good place now. Relax, breathe, smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, the home of intelligence and beauty, where relevant topics are discussed, where what you think counts, and where superior is the norm. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, we're talking about health. We're talking about how to be healthy. And in the last show we did, I was talking about what it meant to be eating healthy, what it means to eat healthy, what it means to do the right thing by eating what you should, by avoiding the foods that aren't good for you, as well as how to incorporate things now that can better you in the long run. And I wanted to put that show off till later on because it is like a sub-show of the last show we did, but I decided we can't put it off. There's no putting it off. We really need to talk about it now because it's really important. And what you do eat changes your entire life. When you're eating well and you're taking care of yourself, it's amazing how well we feel. On the opposite, when we aren't maintaining a certain health code, if we're not taking care of ourselves, if we're eating the foods that we shouldn't be eating, we feel bad. We internalize this. We feel sluggish. We feel stressed. And you know what? We can cause disease that way. And so in that last show that we talked about, when we were talking about what it means to be healthy and the fact of how are you supposed to eat, we kind of ended on the talk about sugar. We were talking about refined sugar and how refined sugars are quite poisonous to us. And I, for example, know that I actually can't eat that much refined sugar. I just can't. I mean, I get blotches. My face blotches out. My hands blotch out. I mean, I look like I actually came into contact with poison oak.
No candy corn for Ashley.
No candy corn. Unbelievable. The candy corn really failed me this time, okay? It really made me sad, actually.
And also no double grease cheese hamburger.
Ew,
for Ashley.
Ashley does not eat meat.
No.
But Bill likes to talk about that, though, I'll tell you that. You know, Gary joins us tonight in studio, too, to talk to us with us and about the concepts of eating well. And let me ask you a question, Gary. You know, because for me, I have a particular times that I eat my meals. I eat a particular amount of meals, and I eat at a particular type of calorie intake. Now, I'm not counting all my calories. I don't have a computer thing that does that, and I know people that do that. But I normally know what I eat and what makes me feel good. Do you kind of go by that subject line, or are you more calorie counting, or do you mostly just laissez-faire?
I'm more kind of zen. I just take it as it comes. And when I want to eat healthier, I cut down on the amounts. And one of my issues is I eat too fast and I don't chew enough. So one of the things I work on is eating slower and chewing more. And sugar is bad. You know, I have been with some sugar plantation owners from Central America, and they know how bad it is, and they won't let their kids and their grandkids eat anything with sugar, but yet they sell huge amounts and export it all over the world.
Well, and like I said on the previous show, it's subsidized, and that's why sugary foods are so cheap.
That's amazing, though. The plantation owners won't even allow their kids to eat it. That tells you how bad it is.
They know.
They know. And sugar is bad for you. And I used to not really think that way, but I do think that it actually breaks down the body. I do think that it can contribute to disease. I do think that it breaks down the good things that we have, probably at a cellular level. But, you know, when I'm thinking about eating, you know, I'm really big on how I feel and what I want to eat. And I know a lot of people are real regimented and these 3 meals a day, but I like to have little snacks throughout the day. I'm not a big breakfast eater, I'll be honest with you. I mean, it's just not something I like to eat. I drink about 45 ounces of water when I wake up in the morning to clear out my system. That's the first thing that you should do when you wake up is to drink water. And it shouldn't be any sort of chlorinated water. It should be healthy, you know, purified water that really helps you to push those toxins out. I mean, because when we're sleeping, you got all that stuff going on. You got to move that out.
So don't do like our boy Spencer and drink pool water.
You know,
remember that?
Don't drink chlorinated water.
That's hilarious.
There are a lot of movies about food in the last 5 to 10 years, like iFood and Food Inc. And they tell people in our generation who didn't know there was a food shortage in the United States. People don't realize there was one. And that's when frozen foods came about. And frozen foods were square for us. That's where the term square meal came. And then the Army used that, too, because they put a different food group in each corner.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
I never knew that. Yeah. I never knew that. Thanks, Gary. Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of change in the way we eat.
I think it's interesting. I didn't realize there was a problem with getting the food. And it is interesting. Yeah, I guess you're right. The square meals, and you have like the thing that you put in the microwave or whatever. The Nighthawk.
Right, right. Yeah, or in my case, the Hungry Man.
Hungry Man.
Which is horrible, but it sure does, you know, pack well and save well. But maybe real quickly, I should just do kind of a larger point. You know, World War II, you know, the transition from the Great Depression, then World War II, then the post-war period, really, radically changed our eating habits in this country, because we went from, you know, the Great Depression, where a lot of people didn't have enough food, to, you know, in the war, we learned, about preservatives and, you know, frozen foods and stuff like that. And, the potato chip, by the way, was invented, you know, during World War II.
I didn't know that.
As a way to, you know, save food for soldiers. And so then that post-war period, I mean, it just, you know, all of a sudden preservatives and processed foods and all that good stuff just took off.
Which is so bad for you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I actually, my microwave broke about 2 months ago. And honestly, I don't really feel like I don't really need to fix it. I mean, I don't think it's really good for you. I think anytime that I want to microwave something, I could definitely boil it. I could definitely cook it in the oven. I could do something more with it than microwave it. I just don't think that the microwave is maybe a healthy standard, you know, to microwave and to heat our food. There's a reason why it's fast, right? Not always fast is not always good.
I've figured out
that, you know, the slow and steady seems to be okay. And it seems to be healthier. And I can't agree with a lot of this stuff. And if it did happen with the war and all this happened, that was all to help soldiers. That was all the fact of process and hold it for as many years as possible. I mean, think about those packs that those soldiers had, those ones that were the brown pack that you had to like, mm-hmm. cut open.
The K-ration.
And they had like the boxes of stuff. And I remember my one thing as a kid, though, the one addiction I did have was the space ice cream. Do you remember that?
I thought you were going to say those sugar-flavored straws.
Ah, those are awesome. I used to eat those, too.
All sugar, but all flavored.
The grape ones, yeah. The cherry ones, the lime ones.
Nice, bright colors, which were all different dyes that we loved.
Red, number 9.
Yeah.
Red Lake, number 5.
Right. Well, you know, I'm really interested in Eastern medicine. And Eastern medicine teaches something that was which is alkaline balance. And the alkaline balance, if you have a correct alkaline balance, you will not get cancer. And everyone who gets cancer, their balance is out of whack. And there was a study, a Harvard study in 1938, where a doctor in this country talked about that, but the American medical world has never really taken that any place.
I think that's interesting because I'm big on pH balance of water, and that's something that is very important to me. And there are various waters out there that have more of an acidic base, more mm-hmm. like a 6.5. Then you have waters out there that are 7.5. You got waters out there that are 8s, 9s. And depending on what you're drinking can really help or hurt you. And I even drink some waters that are way far off from being baseline, that when I drink it, I automatically burp. And I realize this is not the level that I need to be drinking. This
right.
is too acidic for my body. Mm-hmm. And it's so important. You're right. And that's why a lot of this alkaline water is coming out, because people are starting to realize, okay, not only is it important for me to drink water, but the pH of that water is important too. The way that I take in my food. And let's go on and start talking about water, because water really is the basis of life. This is the basis for life. It does so many things. And a lot of times people underestimate water. I have friends all the time. I'm looking at one right here in the studio that told me the other day, I said, how much water are you drinking? He goes, well, I drink a lot of lemonade and there's water in that. And he said, I drink tea and there's water in that. And then he said, and I drink Mountain Dew and this Mountain Dew is watered down. So there's definitely some water in that. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, how many countless people we've had on this show that sit there and point to Big Red and say, that helps them. Okay, I'm over here with water all the time.
You know, actually, I think your sign is Pisces.
Pisces and I can have a lot of fun together, but it's not
like
my sign.
You're part fish.
You know, it is pretty funny because people existed forever without water bottles, and there were water fountains everywhere, and now there aren't, and everybody's got to have a water bottle with them. I think that's pretty funny.
Plastic water bottles that you have to recycle.
I recycle them, but they're not really that good for you either. I had a glass jug, and I still use it sometimes. It's an iridescent. It's like a purple a glass jug that helps with light and that kind of thing. And I used to carry that around, but it was heavy after a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, bam, here's my 3-pound jug of water here at the place. And that just...
Well, you get a workout that way, lifting it.
It's double healthy.
get the workout. But, you know, water is so important morning, noon, and night, and a lot of people don't realize it. And my big contribution to water is this. So let's say, like, you're 130 pounds. I mean, you divide that by two. What is that? Okay, so you got 130 pounds divided by two. That's how many ounces of water that you really should be drinking a day. You could do more than that, but that's really the optimal amount. And so especially if you're traveling or you're drinking a lot of alcoholic beverages or eating a lot of salt and you're holding a lot of water weight gain, you want to add more ounces of water. And so basically there's like the smart water bottles that I use, and I sometimes drink smart water out of it, but other times I drink another water out of it that I actually have in my own house called Rain Fresh. And I just refill the bottle. And some people would argue with me that, yes, it's a number one plastic. It's not a 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. It's a number one, so there's still maybe issues with it. However, I still drink out of it, and I think that's the least of my worst evil on that thing. But I will try to drink 2 of those a day. And if I don't, I don't feel that good. And if you're trying to get over being sick or anything, if you're not drinking water, it's going to stay with you for longer than it would somebody that does drink water. You get stuck.
Absolutely, yeah. Everybody, a quarter of your body is really water, so we need to consume more.
Totally true, and I totally believe
you
in
know,
it.
And water, I mean, think about it. I mean, you know, it cleans stuff out, right? I mean, the water is a cleanser, and so the more water you drink, the more it's going to clean out, you know, your body, your
system.
And
it raises your metabolism level,
right?
Which is good.
And it also helps you to eat less. So anytime that I'm not drinking a lot of water, I always eat more. I always eat more. And it's like when I go into a restaurant nowadays, especially a restaurant that I know that I'm addicted to the food, and I got to be careful, especially a restaurant that serves tortilla chips, you know, a Mexican type restaurant, you know, and you have the hot sauce and they put that out in front of you and you're like, that looks good. Especially there, I want to drink as much water as I can before I walk in there because I'm going to eat less chips, but I'm also going to retain less
water.
Actually,
one of the best tips I ever got was that, you know, when you go out to a restaurant and they always give you the glass of water that nobody drinks, right? Well, the tip is chug a lug that glass of water, okay? Because you'll eat less. You know, you know, one of the things that maybe
I wish.
it works for me though. I mean, because I think a large part of the problem with health in our society is at restaurants they serve these humongous portions, right? Where, you know, it's like it would feed like a whole army in other countries.
True. But I agree with your water thing. I do it too. The only thing I'm not a big fan about is when you go to a place though and the water tastes chlorinated or it seems acidic.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only problem I don't like. Yeah. But sometimes I'll overdeal with it and mitigate it based on the fact that it is water. Or other times I'll order something that is, you know, purified.
Right.
And sadly enough, we have screwed up our water system a little bit. I mean, it's not as bad as other countries. Okay. God bless. But it's not that great.
Right.
So when we return, we're talking more about water intake. As well as alcohol intake and those energy drinks that some people love more than they love life. Stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in 2 shakes.
I'm learning to fly. Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim up bar. Glass of perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, we've been talking tonight about health, how to be healthy. You know, being healthy starts with eating. You know, it starts with being honest, but it also starts with how do you eat? How are you eating? What type of eating? What kind of food are you ingesting? And what type of food is helping and what is hurting? But right when we left for break, we were discussing about water. And water is the basis of what we consume. Water helps us to eliminate waste, toxins, whatever in our body. It also helps to cleanse our body, but it also helps all other types of processes that the body needs, even to help with the spinal fluid, even to sustain things that are actually taking place in your brain. The neurotransmitters need water to be able to do what they need to do. There's a reason for water. There's a reason why the water is the basis of humanity. And it's interesting, if you look in the past about how the changes have gone from civilization to civilization, the movements were normally devised to be around water. There's a reason why we had to have water. You have to have water to live. And a lot of times, because we live in a society now that has all this innovation, a lot of people don't feel like they need that much water. Or they don't know how much they need. And I know that I know some people that will drink 1 8-ounce glass of water when they're brushing their teeth in the morning and they're done. You know, they're like, that's all I wanted, that awful, awful tasting stuff. And it's just like, I think water tastes pretty good. I mean, I personally like water. And I know that there's scientists that have actually done studies on water, actually freezing water elements and being able to slice off pieces of it, looking at it under a microscope and being able to see that water actually in its fine, untampered format actually looks like snowflakes. It actually looks like you can see crystals. The snowflakes and the crystals in the water. Now, when it has been meddled with and tampered with and we have chlorine and what have you, it normally looks like a blob. Also, the interesting thing about water is they've done tests on it, especially in Japan and other scientists, where they actually put like the word love on a piece of paper and tape it to the side of the water bottle. And that water, after they've tested it, is higher charged than regular water. They've also tested water where they put, I hate you, or sat there and said, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you over and over again. And that water becomes negatively charged. And when they look at it under the microscope when frozen, it just looks like black blobs. Like it's sad. But actually, so you remember on Ghostbusters, you remember the goo?
Yeah.
And how it responded to positive or negativity?
Right.
That's what water does.
Interesting.
So are you about to put happy water in the convenience stores?
Ah, that's a great idea, right?
And you heard it here first. God. Ashley Burgess has the patent.
That's awesome. Well, I guess Gary and I both have the patent. We'll add you in there, Bill. Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Gary. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Right.
Throw me a crumb, Ashley.
It's a put of love. You know, they actually just had a water that came out that was love on the bottle.
I thought that was a soda brand.
No, it's actually a water brand.
Okay.
It was at Whole Foods. I saw it, and it's only $2 for like 8 ounces. But I needed the bottle, so I was like, got to take that bottle with me for an experiment. You know, so I bought the bottle of water, drank the water in 1 second, and then I tried to use it for an experiment. But it's very interesting. I mean, because if you think about it, we also relate to positive or negative charge by people telling us how great we are, or they love us, as well as when people are mean and angry and are hatred and show hate toward us, we also feel. And because we are so much made up of water, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And I think that's funny that the Ghostbusters use that kind of concept too, because it kind of reminds you of what water basis is. They probably just use that instead of, you know, the goo.
Yeah.
But yeah, so water is the basis of how we live. But let's talk about alcohol.
Ah, demon rum.
Let's talk about the alcohol. How much are we drinking? What are we drinking? And how does it make you feel? And man, I know that there's a difference between certain alcohols, and I'll be honest with you. I know people that love scotch, but I don't really think that scotch and certain dark alcohols treat people that well. And every time I see people that drink it, they do get trashed faster than I've ever seen, which is, I guess that's a blessing in disguise. However, a lot of times the same people look older, but also they feel worse. It's almost like their liver feels it more than certain clear liquids, or certain clear liquors, as well as I think that it actually stays in the system longer.
Well, here's the thing about alcohol, Ashley. We've actually been drinking alcohol since prehistoric times, all right? Prehistoric human beings figured out a long time ago how to either brew or distill certain fruits or grains. Okay, you know, the ancient Egyptians, you know, are credited with coming up with the first beer recipe. Who knows?
Pat that person on the back.
You know, but who knows if they actually got it from somebody else? You know what I'm saying?
Aliens,
Chinese.
Yep, them or some other people who are no longer around. You know, so we've been drinking alcohol for a long, long, long time. All right. And it's so much so that it's actually part of most cultures around the world. It's just how we socialize with each other. We get together more than a group of three. There's likely going to be alcohol involved.
Group of one for some people.
Yeah, there you
we're
go.
We're glad about that.
You know, to the point actually where alcohol a lot of times is used in religious ceremonies.
Often,
you know. Of course, the most famous example in modern days is the Catholic Church, right?
I will not do that. When I was a kid, I was raised in a Catholic church, and I could not believe that they had like 4 or 5 glasses or, you know, chalices of wine where they had to, like, you drank and then they smear off your lip prints and they moved the glass over just a little bit. And I was like, ew! I'm like, I'm thinking, you know, I don't, you know, in the Lutheran, at least you get like the little cups, you know, like the little glasses. But no. Catholic. Then they started changing that a little bit. But for the most part, you were told, well, if you were sick,
it's part
you're
of
not
the Jewish service
sick.
Also.
I was going to say, I mean, you know,
and there's Catholic, an actual prayer over wine.
Yeah. Catholic Church is only the most famous example. You know, wine in Judaism goes back far before Christianity.
But I thought it had to be kosher wine.
No. Well, it depends. It can be kosher wine, but people drink all different wines, depending how religious they are. But they always say the blessing over it when it's related.
Right.
It's but a one-line blessing.
Well, I had a lot of friends that are Jewish that they're practicing Jews that do not drink wine unless it's kosher.
Well, then they're probably Orthodox.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's more religious.
Yeah.
That's what more, you know, the kosher dietary laws.
Oh, I know.
But also, I mean, you know, the ancient Greeks, you know, had an entire god, you know, an entire cult devoted to just wine drinking. Okay. So
Bacchus?
Yeah, no, well, that's the, actually, you're right. I mean, that's the Roman
that's
version.
That's how the orgy started.
Bacchus.
Dionysus was the Greek version.
Bacchus
was
the
Roman version.
Roman, yeah.
But yeah, so the point, yeah, whether it's Judaism or whether it's, you know, ancient Greek or Roman or Indian or ancient Chinese, you know, alcohol is such a part of our culture that you can't hardly get away from it.
And dying from being unhealthy has been part of our culture, too, for a long time.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, nobody's ever said that alcohol is going to give you the fountain of youth. And I think the thing is using that in moderation. I think that a lot of times we underestimate what alcohol can do, being that it's legal. Okay, we get it. We buy it. It's legal. A lot of us go. I mean, you know, especially in California, we can buy it at the CVS. You go and they have liquor. Not just beer and wine at the CVS, and you think, well, it's being sold all over. I mean, it's at the grocery store. I mean, it can't be that bad, but the problem is that a lot of times we don't realize that there is a limit on intake on alcohol.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what it does do to the body, what it does to dry us out, why you have to drink more water, why you have to take care of yourself, but even more than that, what it does to specific, you know, organs.
Well, and you know, Gary, I mean, as long as alcohol has been around, there's also been penalties for drunkenness.
You DWIs, know? I mean, driving under the influence.
Think about it. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, the ancient code of Hammurabi. You know, the law code. I mean, there was penalties against public drunkenness. You know,
I didn't know about that.
So,
you got them now. You got under the influence.
Yeah.
You can get penalties. You can get thrown in jail for being too drunk in public.
So I'll kind of wrap this up, Ashley.
That'd be good.
Well, I'd like to just ask you about the progression of where alcohol is now, because people that can afford it are getting filtered alcohol. You know, like Kettle One was filtered several times, and that started a whole trend. And a lot of people are into organic wines because they don't have the histamines that are causing issues and causing hangovers. So I think things are moving along in a healthier way within alcohol.
Well, I agree. And I mean, you know, I'm a big proponent of Kettle One.
And the other thing is tequila. And we both love tequila. And, you know, tequila is the only alcohol the U.S. government does not classify as a depressant.
Oh, it's not a depressant.
It isn't.
It actually raises. It actually doesn't depress. And every other alcohol does. And it's interesting how actually tequila actually raises. It also helps you, I don't know, it gives you an overall feeling of well-being sometimes, too. Too much, though. Too much, it gets a little crazy.
I think we need a little now.
We should have some. I actually had a tequila drink the other day. It was probably about 2 months ago. And it was tequila and chartreuse.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was called the Mexican Monk. And they put slices of just a fresh jalapeno in there, stick it in there. That was good. But that chartreuse, that's got a lot of calories.
Yeah, it does.
That's got a lot. I was like, why am I gaining a pound? What just happened now?
But here's the thing, Gary. On the flip side of that coin, she's allergic to beer.
I am allergic to beer.
Did you know that?
Hops and barley, like that's so I can take one sip of it. I get the red eyes, the red nose, the red cheeks. I mean, I look like a Kennedy. You know, I look pretty bad.
You said that on a previous show.
That's funny.
Yep. I mean, I do. Well, I look like I'm hanging out at Chappaquiddick.
Okay, slide them all this way. I have no allergies to anything.
You're lucky. That's lucky. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people listening tonight probably do have an allergy, and now you know peanut allergies become rampant, especially with children. I mean, there are some children that can't even be in the vicinity of an open package of peanuts.
Right.
You know, I understand that. I mean, I have an allergy to sesame seeds and sesame oil, and because sesame seeds and sesame oil are so cheap, it's a cheap product, people use it all the time, especially in like sushis and Thai food and certain different foods. And so it is hard when I go to certain restaurants to have anything to eat. I mean, it's like, why do you have to put sesame seeds on everything? But it's a cheap way of changing the taste up a little
bit. Right.
You know, and so I think everybody listening tonight might have an allergy, whether it's peanut, whether it's sesame seeds. I mean, it could even be an allergy to natural occurring latex. A lot of people will think that latex is just something that's manufactured. But natural occurring latex can occur in various fruits and vegetables, like avocados, like bananas have natural occurring latex, where if you are allergic to regular latex, you would be allergic to that. It might actually show up by eating the product maybe two or three times, and your throat might start feeling like it's closing up. You might start getting a scratchy throat, breaking out on your back, hives. That is a direct sign that you have an allergic reaction to natural occurring latex. So when we return, we're going to be talking more about those energy drinks that people like to drink, as well as chocolate. Are you eating it, and what kind is the best kind? So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, we're talking tonight about what makes you healthy. What makes you healthy? What constitutes health? And the biggest thing is how we eat. What are we eating? What are we drinking? What are we ingesting? What are we putting into our body to create fuel? Are we putting something in our body that makes us feel good? Are we putting something in our body that doesn't? Are we putting something in our body that tastes good initially, but really just is awful on the organs in our body in general? And so we're talking about water. We're moving on right now to the concept of these energy drinks. You know, a lot of people are really proponents of these energy drinks. I know people that drink them, I don't know, by the case a week. You know, it's their thing. And if it's not an energy drink, it's a soda. And I eliminated sodas about 3 years ago. And I remember when I did it, wow. The first 3 days, I felt amazing. I was like, look at me. Okay, I'm not drinking any Diet Cokes anymore. And I touted about it, and I told everybody about it. But by day four, I felt funky. Like, yeah. I felt slow. I didn't feel like I could think. It was almost the same as I felt when I quit smoking, where I would use cigarettes to think. Okay, like, I would have the epiphany, and I'd be smoking a cigarette going, wow, this is a great idea. But then when I quit, there I am on the news going, oh, God, something come into my mind. And the same thing happened with the soda. After day four, I was like, I had a headache, and it was a mild headache, because I didn't drink that much soda, but I know some people that had actual migraines when they got off of soda, and it hurt. And for 2 weeks, I felt like an idiot. Like, I felt like just an idiot. Like, there was nothing I could come into my head about. Everything I was thinking of was kind of mushy. I felt like I had a sinus head. You know how you feel when you have your sinuses real bad, and you kind of feel, like, disjointed, and you probably took something that makes you feel a little out of it? That's how I felt. But I'm glad I gave it up. I'm so happy I gave it up, because that stuff is, it's rotten.
Yeah, I mean, and I went through the same thing a few years ago, where I just decided, okay, I'm drinking way too much soda. And so I kind of went on a cold turkey, where I stopped. And I felt better after a few days.
You felt better?
Yeah, you know.
And how long did you stay off of it, though?
For almost 6 months.
Wow.
Almost 6 months.
Why'd you go back?
Well, because my work schedule changed, and it got real funky where I was working like overnight shifts, mm-hmm. and in short turnaround shifts where I needed, because I'm not a coffee drinker for one thing.
Why not?
I just don't like the taste of coffee. Never developed a taste for it. But I felt like I needed that caffeine shot, you know, to stay awake. So I got to where I was only drinking sodas at work.
I got this stuff from this company the other day. They sent me a package. It's a big box of it. It's like it's a spray. It's like a spray nozzle. It looks like mace.
Okay.
And it's actual sprayable caffeine, and you're supposed to spray it on your neck.
That's funny.
It's supposed to work. I'll get you some.
Well, that's okay.
You're like,
well,
no.
And also, I'll too, I mean, they make these caffeine pills, right? You know, the Vivarin or, you know, caffeine pills. And, I tried those for a while, but I was like, no. I mean, my heart was just going, you know, like that all the time.
Were you scratching your head all the time too?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't remember about that. But I'm glad you want to talk about energy drinks, because for the same reason of the caffeine pills, I don't like, or I don't trust the energy drinks, because I think that's too much caffeine in too concentrated a form.
What do you think about that, Gary?
Well, you know, I used to drink a lot of caffeine. I'm a coffee drinker, so I just stopped drinking the huge amounts and got it down to I have an espresso or cappuccino in the morning and then one or two cups at work. But I was the guy who would have a espresso and a pot of coffee before going to work at 8:30. And at first, you know, I was tired when I stopped consuming the caffeine, and now that I just have a little bit, it's like no difference, and I don't need any energy drinks. I just don't, and I'm an old guy and always active, and you know, you just cut out the bad habit.
I agree, and it's interesting. I when I gave up the sodas and everything, I never had a taste for coffee either. I wasn't a big coffee drinker, but I guess in the last few months, I've become a coffee drinker. But I drink 1 6-ounce or 8-ounce, you know, cup of coffee with just, you know, just
Starbucks.
No, I don't need that. That's too glorified. it's too much. You know, I mean, it's like, I walk in there and I feel crazy. I'm standing there. I'm asking for a medium something. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. I'm standing in some line behind somebody that's ordering something that I have no idea what it is. And every time I get coffee there, you know, it's just I don't need all that pomp and circumstance. And I don't like the idea that the stuff has all been sitting over there for a while, too, the half and half and all. Because all I need is two of those non-dairy creamers or just a little bit of half and half and no sugar. And so basically black with just a little bit, and I'm good. And it doesn't have to be any expensive coffee. It could be 7-Eleven coffee, it don't matter.
Yeah, I consume those, the non-dairy ones. But what really scares me is when you see a cup, and you see the residual, and it's hardened, and you got to think, well, it's doing the same thing in our bodies.
To the lining of your stomach, yeah.
I'm talking about the liquid ones, though, that have no.
So am I.
You are? I've never seen any residue in mine.
Well, you're a lot healthier with half and half or even full, you know, normal cream.
Yeah. I normally do just half and half, just a little bit of that half and half, and it works out great. I mean, just enough to take the black out of there.
But I'd cut down on caffeine, so if there's a night when I need that little go power, then I have a cup of coffee or an espresso, and I feel like it will do more because I'm not in the habit of consuming so much.
Now, how about this, Ashley? Instead of coffee, I drink tea. And I'm talking black tea, like, you know, English style.
I've been drinking tea lately, too.
And I mean, just with like, you know, non-dairy creamer like a sugar substitute, like Splenda or whatever.
Oh, Splenda's bad for you.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah, you don't want it. Any of those, that's a bad product. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. Splenda, aspartame.
Yeah, I think all that's bad.
It's all bad.
Just get used to the taste without it. You can do it.
I can't.
Honey. Use honey.
I've got to have some sweetener.
Use
and
agave.
Local honey will, if you consume local honey every day, you never have allergy problems.
It really helps with allergy problems. It does.
Well, I'll try that then.
It's like bee pollen, you know, if you get bee pollen. But when it's local, it helps you with local allergies. You know, so you don't want to get the stuff from a different state. You want to get the stuff from
here. Well, I just went through a bout of allergies, so actually I'll try that then.
Try it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, once you get off of the sweeteners, you don't need it. Like anytime I have sweet
lose
tea by
the taste.
Accident.
Same with salt. Just lose the taste and you won't miss it.
I just don't eat salt in anything. And when you get something that's salty, it burns my lips.
Because I figure most foods have salt in them already.
Absolutely.
You know, especially your processed foods. You know,
you don't want to be eating those either.
It's like, you know, I see people who will, you know, they'll go to a restaurant and, you know, the first thing you do is grab the salt shaker and it's just like...
They haven't even tried the food.
I know.
I've eaten in some people's houses where literally my lips burn.
Mine too.
It's like, oh my God, and I just know what that's doing to my body. And I'm over there just trying to drink as much water as possible. But yeah, you want to eliminate sugar. You want to eliminate sugar substitutes. You want to eliminate salt from your diet. All these things are not good. Let's move on to the concept of chocolates, because I think chocolates are interesting. I think chocolate for some people means one thing and means another. And I'm a big proponent on very good organic dark chocolate.
Well, one of the things we can teach our listeners is the way to know real chocolate from candy that's flavored like chocolate. Only real chocolate will have cocoa butter in it. If you don't see that on the ingredient list, it is not chocolate, even though it's labeled chocolate.
Good point. That's so true.
There's a lot of just junk candy that's, marketed as chocolate. It's not. You know, I'm an experience in this. My first promotional product were chocolate chips for casinos. So I learned all about chocolate and visited a lot of chocolate places.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I eat chocolate from small craft places, especially they have some new ones that are coming up in Mexico and what have you. Very interesting, very good dark chocolate. It feels good. I mean, it's a taste. You have to develop the taste. And with any of this stuff, I know that some people are going, well, man, I like the milk chocolates and I want the Hershey's.
80%.
Yeah. And it's just like, this isn't, that's not, it's all sugar too. And the darker the chocolate is, the better it is for you, the better the antioxidant, that you can have for it. And it's almost the same as when you're drinking like one glass of red wine. I think it's called Restrol or whatever that, and it's R-E-S-E-T-R-O-L. And that actually helps with your heart, but it really helps as a really powerful antioxidant that can help prevent disease.
Yeah, I think Belgium has the best chocolate in the world too.
You do?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not Switzerland?
No.
They have milk
chocolate. They were the first to market milk chocolate, and they were good at marketing.
Ah.
But Belgium has the finest.
Okay.
I'm going with Mexico right now. I mean, some of these areas in Mexico, like Cabo, I had some chocolate that was out of this world. Very expensive, though. They're very proud of their chocolate. I mean, a chocolate bar was like $22 at the airport.
Holy moly.
I was like, holy crap. But you know what? It's dark chocolate, and it's just really, really good.
Well,
it was like a fine wine, You don't want to eat too much of it.
I tell you, Ashley, I have a confession to make, okay? Milk chocolate is my crack. I'm just completely
you
addicted
finally
to
it. Said it.
I'm just addicted to it. I love it.
And nuts or just plain, what kind
either,
do you like?
Either or.
Caramel.
Wow. I mean, caramel, all that stuff. Basically, think of the 7-Eleven or the convenience store. Hershey's Kisses is my favorite.
The regular ones?
Yeah. And I'm just a chocoholic, and I honestly try to eat healthy. But throughout the day, healthy breakfast, leafy salads for lunch and green vegetables for dinner with whatever else I'm eating. But man, it's like here's a confession. Last night, you know what Dairy Queen is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
DQ country.
Yeah, DQ country.
Yeah.
And because, I grew up in West Texas, so those are like all over the place where I grew up, right? So last night I binged, Ashley. I went and had a medium chocolate extreme blizzard.
Oh, my God.
And
they don't care about fat. Their food's the worst. I mean, talk about marketing. Okay, they had the Belt Buster.
Yes.
Now, how appealing is the Belt Buster when you think about it?
Which it's not, but,
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
I've enjoyed it. Right.
It's
from another era.
I was just craving chocolate last night.
I'm glad that you're honest with us. I mean, we needed to get this out. I mean, this whole addiction process.
Yeah,
you have to admit the problem.
He might need a chocolate support group.
I think he might. We'll find one. We'll find some people that can help you out.
I'm sure there is like a 12-step program because I could probably go through it.
Bill.
But everybody has their favorite junk food from when they grew up. Yeah. It might have been Dairy Queen if you're in Texas. It might have been Skyline if you're Cincinnati.
Yeah.
New York might be something else and California. But everybody, and the memory
In-N-Out Burger, California.
There you go.
In-N-Out.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God. Yeah, last time I ate there, I got like mucho, mucho sick.
I bet you did.
Oh, my gosh. So I tried to eat some fries, and that was the end-all be-all. For the next 4 hours, I felt like crap and just was mad at everybody. Just had attitude. Stay tuned. We return. We'll be talking more about chocolate and more about the sauces and butters that we consume on a daily basis. Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess. We'll be back in two shakes. I can lift you up.
I can show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be. Get in here and give us your perspective. We're listening. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. We're talking tonight about what makes you healthy. How can you be healthy? And one of the main constituents of being healthy is what? Eating well. doing what's right for you, eating that works for you, eating that's good for you. And a lot of times, you know, in our society and the things that we love aren't necessarily what we should be eating. And, you know, Bill just gave his confession right now. I mean, we weren't in Catholic church, but he gave his confession anyway. And that's totally cool. And he basically had this blizzard at this restaurant, and he loved it. And he liked it a lot. And we're allowed to have those treats every now and again, but when we're making this a situation where it's a weekly thing or a monthly thing, it's probably not that good. However, if we're avoiding foods and then binge eating, that's a bad deal. And so for you to eat that, it wasn't the best, but if you were going to go out and binge eat a pound of Hershey's Kisses, that probably would have been not as good either. You know,
that was another night for me.
I was going to say, yeah, I'll tell you about that night another time.
So that was Saturday night when I had that. So, you know, but chocolate is really good, and if you're going to eat chocolate, you want to eat really good dark quality chocolate that obviously has the proper ingredients in it, and it's not being touted as chocolate and it's just a mere candy or chocolate substitute. So let's talk about that butter and those sauces that everybody likes to eat. And you know, it's funny how people eat usually when they're at home, they eat different than when they're at a restaurant. And I think that's funny. My whole life I've had issues with butters and sauces, and I just can't eat them. I can't process them. And so when I was younger, when I was like 7 or 8, I wouldn't really speak up. But then about 9, I started speaking up, and I remember telling the waiters or waitresses, please leave the butter or oil off. And they were looking at me like I was a crazy kid. And they'd look at my parents usually and go, is this real? I mean, am I supposed to listen to it? And I'd be like, yes, please write this down. And I wanted everything plain with no oil, no butter on it, because I knew it would make me sick. And so it's very interesting, though, how people don't eat like that at home, but then they go out and they have hollandaise sauce or béarnaise sauce or a butter topping with the lump crab, you know, on the top of this, on top of that, with some béarnaise on that and some butter this and butter that. And then they wonder when they're leaving the restaurant, I just don't feel that good.
You know what? That sounds mighty good to me.
Telling you,
I knew I was going to paint a picture for Gary on that.
Like I said, I grew up on the, you know, Southern style heart attack special, you know, type food, and you know, not just fried, but also, you know, soak it in butter.
Well, yeah, my grandmother, I remember when she used to make peas, green peas. Now,
right?
Okay, let's talk about the green pea deal. The green peas start as good people. They start. It's a good quality item. It wants to be eaten. It wants to be healthy. But my grandmother would make that and put it in a pan and then take a block of butter.
Right.
Lando Lake butter.
Right.
And stick it in.
So not the tub, but we're talking about the block.
The stick. Yeah. The stick
of
butter.
But the world's progressed. You know, your grandmother probably looked at it as the good life. She could afford it. She had it and was making your food richer. And that's the way it was perceived then. We know more now.
Well, yeah. I mean, like when I was younger, my parents were middle class, and they, you know, they did their best. But at the same point, the steak and baked potato was the sign of opulence, right?
Right. And so just the cigarettes were too.
Oh yeah, you had that. You know, Scotch cigarettes. You know, and my mom would make steak and baked potato. You know, with all the fixings and all the dressings on there, and let's get a little hollandaise sauce on the side. And that was considered high life. And that's the best I ate. And I remember after each meal going, God, I don't feel that good. But, I mean, this is what we're supposed to be eating. And, you know, my mom would talk about how she didn't have steak when she was a kid. I mean, you know, it was just all they had. And so a lot of times, you're right, we think about what's good in the form of what we've been deemed to think is good or what was a high quality or what was expensive.
Food as a reward instead of a nourishment. And right. I still have that problem. I think about it that way.
Food, maybe we should view food as a medicine almost.
Well, see, the thing is that food becomes addictions to people. And that's one of the sidebar of the addiction is when you sit there and use it as a reward. I mean, foods can be used as rewards in very small times because it's really interesting because there's a difference between eating to be healthy and eating for sustenance or eating for reward or eating to fill a void or eating for other reasons. And that's why there's a real concern that I have when we're talking about what healthy means when we're talking about eating, because most of the time when we're eating for our health or we're eating for sustenance, we eat high quality, we eat better, we eat what's good for us. But when we're eating for maybe just comfort food. Okay.
Right.
That's a good example. There's a reason they call it comfort food.
Emotional reasons for eating.
Yes.
Like chicken fried steak with gravy and all the fixings is not healthy. Okay.
No, absolutely not.
But if you're going through some sort of depression and you go and you go, let's go to the Southern cookery place down here and, you know, I'm going to get some of this and I'm going to eat this and that, you know, and you get the, you know, the sugar tea and the this and that and you eat it and maybe you feel better. For me, I always feel worse.
Southern style sweet tea, nectar of the gods.
Oh my God, that stuff will kill you. That stuff will take you down.
Whatever you relate to is comfort food from your childhood, I think.
I'm floating in heaven right now.
I never had any comfort food from my heaven. The closest comfort food I could ever think of would be a toaster. What were those?
Oh, pop-ups.
Was it pop-ups?
Pop-tarts.
And I never knew, so my mom never really cooked. All she cooked was a steak and baked potato, and my dad wanted it. And God bless her soul. And she's still alive with us today. However, she just never was a really good cook. And she would give me those Pop-Tarts in the morning. Okay? And she never, ever once put it in the toaster. I never knew that it went in the toaster. I just thought it was a cute ad campaign.
So you ate it cold, huh?
I ate it cold because I thought that's what you were supposed to do. And finally, like my senior year, a friend of mine was like, I've been meaning to say something to you for a while.
That's hilarious.
But Ashley, what are you doing?
That's a new one.
And I'd be like, what do you mean? And as I'm opening that silver package.
And here's an admission from Ashley.
And it was the frosted cherry ones that I always liked. And I would eat that and they'd be like, you know that you put them in the toaster. And I go, what? And they go, you put them in the toaster. They go, did your mom never? And I go, she just hands me a silver package. And tells me to go to school because it was in a little silver package. You know, you had three of them in a box. And they were like, dude, we got to do something. So one day my friends all like, they get the toaster and they stick it in there and they're like, this is what it's supposed to taste like. I'm like, oh my God, this is what it's supposed to taste like?
Yeah.
This is what it's really about? I've been missing out for all these years. My mother never once said anything about a toaster.
She's like, here, eat this and shut up, kid.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been frozen for all I knew and I was still eating it, you know? I mean,
but
it's interesting what we consider what we comfort food.
It is. And, you know, speaking of comfort food, I mean, you're talking about the buttery sauces, you know, and all that good stuff. It's like, oh, it tastes so good.
See, it doesn't taste good to me at all.
Yeah, I love it too.
I mean, I don't like it.
Bolognese sauce, hollandaise sauce, bring it on.
I used to like it. I don't like it anymore.
Like you could, French food, you know, we think of as, you know, real high, you know, high class food. I mean, anything tastes good if you soak it in a pound of butter.
Anything tastes good if you fry it, okay? I mean, you can fry a boot. I can take Gary's shoe right now that he's been walking around in and take the sock and fry it, and somebody's going to say it's okay, you know? This is a delicacy. Yeah, it's bad for you. I mean, like, I don't like the taste of it because I know what it's going to do to me after I eat it. So I know that after 20 or 30 minutes, I'm gonna feel awful. I mean, I recently had a cookie. Two cookies, actually. Okay. I don't know if I should be honest about the cookie company, right? Good. But it's an organization sells a bunch of cookies every year.
Okay.
That's all we're going to say. And a friend of mine said, hey, I have three boxes of said cookies over here. Would you like a box? I said, no. But I said, I'll open up and I'll have one. Well, I ended up having two. After I had the two, I turned over the box and realized I had just eaten 140 calories on two little small, tiny cookies.
Calories of what?
Stuff.
Yeah.
And the ingredients was like, you know, if you look at the paragraph, it would have been probably like 10 sentences long.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at that, and literally within 10 minutes, I started getting a headache. I started feeling nauseated. And it just started coming in a wave. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. And I drank the water that I had, and I waited it out for about 45 minutes, and I finally stopped feeling like crap. But I don't know what's in it. I don't know what's in it, but it's not good. It's not good for you. I mean, my body was like, what in the heck is this? I mean, this is not World War III. This isn't the last food you have. Why are you putting this into my body, you know?
Plastic food.
It's awful. It was bad. So, you know, the last thing I really want to talk about is just starving yourself for overeating. You got to figure out which side of the module are you. Are you eating what's right for you and eating enough food? Are you eating adequate enough for your body, for the body size, for your weight, for your ability for your brain to work? Or are you, on the other hand, are you starving yourself? And I know there's a lot of women and there's some men out there that do starve themselves on a daily basis. They undereat to keep a certain physique. Maybe they're also taking certain medications to try to eliminate that craving and what they eat. And unfortunately, what happens is they get thin and they're not fit. So there's a difference between thin and skinny, flabby, and fit.
Well,
and so that's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at an evolutionary mechanism of the human body, okay? When humans evolved, and you didn't know when your next meal was going to come. All right, and so like if you had a drought or whatever, so therefore if you starve your body, then your body thinks, okay, you know, the next chance I get, I'm going to gorge because I don't know what the next time that I'm going to have to eat. So that's why, okay, you go through the starvation diet and you may lose a few pounds, then you know, you'll binge and put it right back on.
Or you're always unhealthy.
Yeah. Right, because you've changed your metabolism.
Right.
And it doesn't work. I mean, you know, I'm talking about people. I remember like Karen Carpenter and people like those talk about that.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
But that's real. There are people out there still to this day, maybe not to that extreme level, but there
are
still
women. Kind
of
funny that her band was named Bread.
You're not supposed to laugh about that.
Boo, yes.
It was named Bread, right?
Yeah.
It's a food.
Exactly.
I mean, it could have been named food.
Food issues.
It could have been food, you know? I mean, it's sad that people go through that. And that's also, you know, a body dysmorphic disorder and other issues where you're looking in the mirror seeing a fat person when there is no fat person there. But, you know, you have to figure out what's right for you and whether it's certain foods that benefit you, that seem to fuel the energy, that allow you to get from point A to point B. I mean, sometimes people don't need to be eating carbs. Some people need to eat carbs. Some people should be eating a solid vegetarian diet. Some people need to be eating some meat as protein. You need to figure that out because it all depends on you, the way that you metabolize things, as well as maybe checking out your blood type. What blood type are you? And you can do some research on that because sometimes different blood types are better with different types of food. And there's a lot of books out there. I wouldn't just go with one book. I would actually go and do a mass research on that and then actually try the food out and do an experiment of how do you feel when I eat this. Do I feel good? Do I feel bad? When I eat this, do I feel sluggish or do I feel open-minded? Do I feel clear-headed? When I eat this, do I seem to have an allergic reaction? When I eat that, does my metabolism seem to slow down or speed up? And you can actually write this down in a journal. You can have a health journal. It's okay to write about your health. Write it down and figure out what's best for you and what works. I mean, I think it's very clear because you have to take your health in your own hands. Nobody else can do it for you. Nobody can tell you this is a surefire thing and you have to eat this way, otherwise you're not going to be healthy. You got to eat to what's best for you. Gary, it was a great show tonight.
I enjoyed being here and great things to think about.
Yeah, and thanks very much for coming by.
And I just think that all in all, if you eat well, just remember that eating is all the basis of understanding what to eat, what you need to avoid, and what you need to incorporate. It's all about being healthy. And listeners, don't miss Friday's show. We have a great show for you coming up on Friday. But also, starting back this coming Tuesday, we're going to continue the concept of how to be healthy. We're going to continue with being authentic. You know, we've discussed honest, we've discussed eating, and now we're going to discuss authentic and how to add that into your healthy living. So stay tuned because I don't want you to miss any part of this. And by the way, guess what? We appreciate you listening and Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back this time in three shakes.